welcome to the brand new podcast starring me, Ben from Blazers Edge, and my favorite person in the world, Kevin Pelton from BasketballPerspectives.com, and also the Seattle Storm. How's it going, Kevin?
It's freaking hot. I think it is in Portland, too, right? This is a heat wave up and down the coast, right?
It's 147 degrees here in Portland. How hot is it in Seattle?
About 152. I'm in the shade, so it's only 140. I'm outside to record this conference call away from my desk.
Dude, it is hot as balls. Are we allowed to say that on a podcast, or is that like going to get edited when I go back through and listen to this again?
I don't think the FCC can touch us. I mean, you know.
We should probably explain. We're going to do this podcast, 14 times a week, we decided? In the mornings and in the afternoon, 7 days a week, and we're going to have 4-hour-long each session. So basically, it's going to be 8 hours of podcasting a day, brand new, all podcasts, all the time, lifestyle for our listeners. Isn't that right?
Keep in mind that about 5 hours of those 8 hours a day is just going to be me reading off every player in the league's warp. So that fills it up right quick right there.
Yeah, that's basically my plan. It's going to be like the Stephon Marbury Ustream. It's just a lot dorkier. Like, it'll just be like that. I don't know. Anyway, so we have like a lot to get to. We obviously don't know what we're doing when it comes to podcasting, but we are going to try to podcast at least like semi-regularly. Every time you need to sell tickets to the Seattle Storm, right? Like, that's our new goal.
First off, I take offense to the notion. I've done a variety of different podcasts. We did podcasts on the Storm website like 3 years ago.
But you're just a rookie who doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, the problem is I'm not the one hosting. You are, so.
That's like Jared Bayless hosting a point guard podcast with Andre Miller and Steve Blake, isn't it?
is that your natural segue into our first topic?
Beautiful segue. It's so smooth. People are just like, wow, GQ. All right, so obviously Andre Miller is like all anyone wants to talk about in Portland. And just literally hours before we recorded this podcast, Nate McMillan went on local radio station and made the comment that Steve Blake, as of right now, as of today, whatever day it is, Steve Blake is still the starting point guard for the Portland Trailblazers. What do you make of that statement?
Well, first off, I thought you were big into citing your sources. So it was 95-5 the game, wasn't it?
95-5 the game, Wheels at Work, twitter.com/wheelsatwork. Brian Wheeler, voice of the Blazers, with Jay Allen. I'm not sure his title. But 95.5 the game, flagship radio station. Whoa, that's a hard word to say on a podcast and not get caught for swearing. Flagship. Anyway.
What do you make of that? Looking at your poll that you put up on Blazers Edge, even fewer hours ago than Nate made that statement, so we're talking immediacy in this podcast. I think the option I would go for is that's just Nate saying the right thing professionally for Steve Blake and his ego and, you know, everything that goes along with that after they go out and sign another point guard. But realistically speaking, you didn't sign Andre Miller. You didn't give him $7 million a year so that he could come in and be your backup point guard, realistically speaking. Now, Nate is a guy who's willing to put contract aside. He's shown that in the past, you know. His first year in Seattle, he benched Vin Baker and played Jelani McCoy over him. He started Art Long and guys like that. And, you know, last year, Nicholas Batum is a different situation as a first-round pick, but kind of along those same lines. He's not going to be beholden to the contract, but at the same time, we also have heard that Nate thinks that Andre Miller was the point guard he wanted from day one, or was from the free agent, rather, that he wanted from day one. And he obviously thinks there's a lot of things he can bring to the table. So I think we'd all be stunned if he ends up not starting.
So let's look at Blake for a second. Now, this offseason, Kevin Pritchard has sort of really backed Blake pretty heavily. You know, he said he believes in Blake, sees him bringing like a veteran toughness. You know, even at Summer League, management sources said they would be totally fine staying with Blake and Bayless at the guard position. And then sort of all of a sudden this plan C comes up where they do actually go out and get ostensibly a starting point guard that would go above Blake. And you mentioned his ego. Is that just, you know, these guys are trying to sort of massage Blake into a situation in which his minutes are going to fall off considerably next year? Or how do you think that shook out? And do you think that maybe Nate's statement is sort of a covering up of their path, you know, as they, you know, maybe didn't actually want to go get a point guard and wanted to address other positions?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that Kevin Pritchard was very honest that this was their plan C, and this is not a surprise to us. We all know that they went after Turkoglu. We've got the signed offer sheet in the case of Millsap. Those were the two guys that they wanted and valued more than Andre Miller. So in those situations, that would presumably, barring a trade, have meant going with Blake as the backup point guard. So I think I do take those statements at face value. You know, the one thing with Nate that surprises me is not that he didn't come out and say, oh, Andre Miller is our starter, but that he didn't describe it as a competition in training camp. You know, I think that's what any coach is going to want to try to create, is that sense of competition. And that way you get both guys coming into camp playing their best, as opposed to either of them, you know, feeling like their position is set in stone and that they don't have to come in and have a strong training camp. Now, both of these guys are good enough and qualified enough to start that I think that that's kind of naturally going to create itself, even without Nate having to say it, because they're going to be looking over their shoulder all the time.
Hey, you know, well, I think it's interesting that they were backing Blake so much earlier in this offseason, and they ended up upgrading the position, which I thought all along they should have been upgrading anyways. So I don't know. I kind of like to think that maybe they sort of had a revelation, whether it was at Summer League or sometime shortly after that, and they were realizing, like, hey, wait a minute. Like, we are pretty short at the one. Like, if Blake goes down, we're, you know, not in the best situation. So maybe, in a way, Andre Miller is also kind of injury insurance and just get a little bit deeper at that point guard position. The one position they weren't, you know, exactly deep at least given how Bayless played. Hey, what did you think of Bayless's summer league, by the way? Did you catch any of it?
I caught a couple of games on Comcast Sportsnet, and, you know, it's tough to say because his role in summer league is so very different than it's going to be during the regular season, and the players around him are so very different from who he's going to have on the floor with him, you know, if he was the backup point guard, if he was to claim that job and they hadn't signed Andre Miller. You know, I think he's got a lot of skills, and he's a competitor, and he's learning. You know, you see the development from where he was as a rookie to where he was in his second year, but he's never going to be that pure point guard. You know, I think you're always, if you're trying to make him that guy, going to be shoving him, you know, a round peg into a square hole to some extent. The one thing I really liked that I saw with him in the summer league was his ability to move without the ball when Pooh Jeter came in and was running the point guard, which is something that would be really nice as a compliment to Brandon Roy. You know, that's what I've talked about with this Miller signing. Is the thing is, Andre Miller has played his whole career with the ball in his hands. Now he's going to be spending a lot of time off the ball, and that's just not something that he does, for better or worse. So I think that's something where Bayless could have helped the team, you know, if he was part of the rotation.
Do you think that Bayless is going to get moved? Be honest. Break me down easily, but, you know, be honest. You think he's gone, right?
I don't think he's 100% gone. I think it depends on what kind of deal they get for him. But I think that, you know, Pritchard has got to be looking for something for him, and maybe with Travis Outlaw, or at least one of the wings, because, you know, you still got that jam on the wing, even not signing, you know, as much as that was talked about with Hito Turkoglu, even without him, with Webster coming back, there's too many wings. I mean, you can't imagine that Kevin Pritchard is done and is going to sit on his hands the rest of the summer, do you?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the only thing that I think that would keep Bayless here, and this sounds bad, but I think his trade value is pretty low right now. Like, I don't think anyone really wants Jared Bayless. I mean, we saw with Sergio. God, I almost feel like he's in the position Sergio was in last year, where, like, Sergio really wanted to get out of town. There weren't enough minutes for him, and this wasn't the right fit with the coach, and they were asking him to do things he couldn't do. Like, almost all those things apply to Jared right now. Down at Summer League, I mean, he was so adamant, oh, it's going to be a battle. It's me and Steve coming into training camp, and, you know, last year I knew I was going to be a backup. This year, you know, obviously I'm going to, you know, be battling with Blake for the starting minutes. And I think in his plan, or in his first scenario, I get 15 minutes as the backup to Blake. That's not so bad. I think now his worst-case scenario is he just gets 82 DMPs because neither one of those guys gets injured. You know what I mean? Are there really any minutes for him at all? I can't see him even cracking the court at all, you know, except maybe in blowouts and whatnot. So, I mean, he's got to be – if I was Jared Bayless, I mean, I'd be in KP's office demanding a trade, wouldn't you?
Well, or just staring really intently, something like that. I think the difference between him and Sergio is, you know, first off, Bayless was a lottery pick. Sergio, for better or worse, was, what, the 26th pick when he came out? You know, I mean, he burst on the scene. I remember watching him a few times back before I had – The Blazers were the team I followed the most closely. That, you know, I was really excited by what I saw from him during his rookie season. But, you know, he was a little older by the end of last year than Bayless will be at the end, or is right now, or will be at the end of the season. So I do think his value is higher than that. But he's the kind of guy who's not going to fit every team because of just who he is as a player. You know, if you've got a if you're looking for a pass-first point guard to set everyone else, he's just not that kind of guy. But he's got the skills. You know, he can be a contributor in this league. I think we all agree with that, even if we aren't all members of Team Bayless.
Well, I think we all do agree on that. But, okay, so, yeah, sure, he has more trade value than Sergio. But we saw what Kurt was.
The other thing, by the way, Chicago, you know, supposedly demanded him in the Kirk Heinrich trade, you know, as part of those negotiations, and the Blazers weren't willing to give him up then. So I think that shows a certain amount of value. I mean, if you want to put stock in those rumors.
Well, I don't. I thought that was, like, all entirely made up. But because, well, the reason why is because Awoj, he kept coming out and saying there's no talks going on. So I figured it was just ESPN guys making stuff up. You know what I mean? Because it was, like, so juicy, like a three-way trade, Boozer. Like, that just had, like, so much legs to it from, like, a page view perspective. I just figured they just made that up, you know? But then again, what do I know? So, yeah,
It sounded plausible. It sounded plausible that Bayless could be the sticking point, and I think that shows the value that he does have.
Well, I see that's the thing, is I think he has internal value more than he has external value, because I think he's going to be the sticking point in a lot of situations where, you know, they didn't want to trade Sergio, reportedly. You know, they didn't want to dump him until they absolutely realized they had to dump him and they had no choice, and look what they dumped him for, like negative trade value, basically, you know. So I think that he's worth more because of, like you talked about, you know, they drafted him high. Obviously, he's really, really young. I think he's got a lot of internal value, but at some point, if you're Bayless, don't you just get sick of being, you know, the point guard of 3 years from now, or, you know, the point guard that's the circle, you know, trying to be fit into a square hole? I mean, I don't know, you know?
Well, the question is then, do you consider trading Blake? I think that, I mean, in the wake of Nate's comments, it's a little different, but that option's kind of disappeared off the table the last couple of days. I mean, that makes some sense, too. You know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. If he's the backup to Andre Miller, and he's not going to be any more happy with that role long-term than Bayless's third point guard, so maybe he's the odd man out.
Well, I would love that, personally, but, you know, I'm not sure. That's the thing, is, like, Nate comes out, and, you know, Nate and KP both back Blake so thoroughly and so regularly, you kind of got to wonder, well, maybe he is in their plans, but he only has a one year left on his deal. You know what I mean? He's relatively cheap. I guess the other way to look at it is you've got $4 million tied up in Blake. You've got $2 million tied up in Bayless. You've got now $7 million tied up in Miller. You know, long term, can you pay all three of those guys? Or even next year, can you pay all three of those guys? I mean, maybe they just keep Blake for 1 year and let him go, and then Bayless, you know, takes over next year. Can you keep Bayless happy for a year? I guess that's what it kind of boils down to. If you can kind of convince Bayless, take no minutes this year, you know, we've got you next year because Blake will be gone, maybe you can tell him that story and everything works out.
Well, no, it's going to be tough, but, you know, I mean, on the other hand, what's his leverage the other way? You know, Sergio had the option of, you know, had a little more in terms of, well, I could go back to Spain anytime I want, you know, not really because of the way that EuroLeague teams and NBA teams, you know, honor each other's contracts. But he's got that option there in the same way that Bayless doesn't. His only option is being unhappy and complaining, and that's not really going to help him either way.
Would you say that Sergio and Sean May have the potential to be the next John Stockton, Karl Malone next year?
I don't even know how to respond to that. First off, I'm counting on Sergio and John Brockman hooking up as a premier duo. Maybe John Brockman can rebound Sergio's misses.
I feel like John Brockman was getting run somewhere. I don't know where it was. People were actually talking about him like, hey, this guy could be decent. Was it Kevin Artemis who was talking about him? I don't know. I feel like somewhere I read recently that people were excited about Brockman. I was, like, blown away. But people in Portland here thought Pujetta was going to be, you know, the third point. Got Andre Miller. So, I mean, who knows with this stuff. All right.
You can talk yourself into a lot in Summer League.
Yeah, well, you know, Summer League was a really good time, by the way. It's awesome to see, like, these rookies, who they just, like, carry themselves off the court, and, like, the second-year players, they carry themselves off the court like they're the superstars. They're not, you know. It's like guys like Johnny Flynn all of a sudden have, like, Dwayne Wade-size, not egos, but sort of, like, charisma or presence, you know. It's just really, like, an alternate universe where there's not really any TV cameras yet. All of these guys who like really haven't made it yet act like they've made it. I don't know. It's fantastic. Like Jared Bayless, for instance, he's basically like Brandon Roy down there. It's awesome. Like, you know, I mean, he's the best player. He knows it. He carries himself like it, and you know, he talks about his teammates. And, it's funny. Anyway, let's talk about another happening in Vegas. Look at this professional segue, and that would be Greg Oden. Have you been following this USA minicamp thing over the last week at all? Or
I think it's been impossible not to follow it. I've been following Casey's tweets from down there. And by the way, a busy summer for Casey, who got out of summer league, but Spain and France and now Vegas in a span of a month, that guy has kept his bags packed. But that and the stories that have come out of there from Jeffrey Arnold and Mark Spears with that Yahoo, just reading that. And it's interesting to see him open up and kind of talk about admit the fact that he was going through some tough times psychologically, like you pointed out on the site. And I think that's a positive step, just to admit that there was something going on there.
Well, are we sure we can call Jeffrey Arnold's pieces stories, or should we just call them paragraphs? What podcasts are for, right? Just take like unnecessarily cheap shots against like people who, you know, you run into like once every 6 months. No, I mean, I think I was leaning a little bit heavier on Casey's information than Jeffrey Arnold's, maybe a little bit heavier on Mark Spears than I was Jeffrey Arnold's. But yeah, the psychological thing, like I was really happy, like I wrote, to see him admit that publicly. I mean, if you're Greg Oden, that's not easy to do, especially when you're down there and it's like the alpha male of all alpha male minicamps, where you've got all these guys who have been lottery picks. Some of them have already gotten big deals, like Josh Smith. Millsap just got a big deal, you know, and it's just like this uber competitive environment where everyone's trying to make, you know, one out of maybe four spots that are available on the Team USA Olympic squad, even though some guys who are likely to make them aren't even there, you know, so it's still like this really uber competitive, like, environment. And here's Greg Oden, and his headline is, oh, by the way, I just saw a shrink. I mean, that takes some guts and some balls to come out and say that, don't you think?
Well, I think definitely it does, and you know, I mean, I think it's a good setting for him because it's not a situation like Portland where he has to deal with, you know, he was still a storyline, but it's not the same way as everybody's constantly focused on how's the progress of the number one pick going every, you know, all the time. I don't think he felt that same kind of pressure, and I think that's what it ultimately all stemmed from, was this pressure of, I was the top pick, I was the savior of the franchise, and then I got hurt, and then I wasn't, you know, had a tough time coming back like everybody does, but, you know, am I letting everyone down and things like that? And I think people took your observations about that as kind of a negative on Greg Oden, but to me, you know, I think that's kind of understandable. A lot of people would feel that way in that same situation, and I think it's a positive in that, you know, we know that it's something that he can work on and can improve in terms of his confidence and not carrying that with him all the time. You agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the first step for Greg Oden to get where he needs to be mentally was to sort of admit that there was a problem. And last year, at the beginning of the year, I mean, as early as probably, what, November or December, it was already, you know, there's something wrong with Greg here. Why isn't anyone talking about it? Why isn't anyone acknowledging it? Everyone's kind of acting like, you know, there wasn't any problem, just kind of carry on, when, you know, his body language was such that there was no way he was going to be able to succeed on a basketball court, given how competitive the NBA is, you know? And it's sort of like, all right, well, let's get it out in the open, let's talk about it, and we can move on. I mean, he was completely set up for failure last year. I mean, he's got guys like Canzano coming up to him, you know, do you care about basketball? And was the question ever really, you know, did Greg care about basketball? I think the real question was, you know, how was he dealing mentally? Was he in a position where he could properly do what he can do on a basketball court last year? I don't think he ever was, you know, and I'm not sure you would ever get anyone in the Portland management to, you know, state that publicly, but I'm sure that they're relieved that they can kind of, you know, get his mental issues sort of out in the open, discuss it a little bit, and it sounds like, you know, he's a happier guy now, and that's how it should be. I mean, once you kind of get that all off your chest, you should be happier and you should be more productive going into next year. But let's get back onto the court. Enough sort of brain picking of Oden. What did you think about the videotapes? Have you watched any of the tapes of that Ed Casey had put on Blazers.com?
I haven't watched the tapes yet, so I've only heard about them secondhand.
Yeah, Henry wrote about it today. You know, I thought that he looked a little bit slow. I mean, the action was kind of going past him in both directions. You know, he couldn't keep up, and I guess you kind of expect that when you're around elite guys, really guard dominated, sort of international focus the USA team has had recently. But I mean, he definitely looked like he was running better and moving better, but he didn't really look like he was running, you know, quick enough to fully keep up. And so obviously that's still a concern, you know, given how much we've heard about his workouts over the last, you know, month, 2 months. I kind of was hoping for more. I think my expectations were a little bit higher, but he had a decent stat night, you know, 7 points, and they said either 8 or 10 rebounds. So, I mean, I think that we can take this as a net positive, the mini camp, even though I don't think people were gushing about his performance like they were, say, Kevin Durant.
We got to bring in Kevin Durant, of course. But what about protecting the rim? Because I think that, to me, is the main question with Oden. You don't really need, at this point, for him to become a dominant post player. I mean, you know, that's the thing in the Andre Miller discussion. Keep talking about improving the offense. The Blazers had the best offense in the NBA last year. I mean, slowed down in the playoffs, and we can debate why that happened, and people have different reasons for it. But you don't need Greg Oden to become a dominant offensive player. You need to improve at the defensive end, and if you're not going to upgrade the point guard position defensively, which signing Andre Miller doesn't really do that for you, you know, he's not going to fix a lot of the problems, even though he's a little bit bigger, more physical defensive player than Blake was. You need Oden to become that kind of rim protector that they imagine they're getting when they drafted him. So I think that's my big question mark with Greg.
Yeah, you know, he seemed like he was doing a pretty good job of, like, leaning on his man in the video that we were able to see. Obviously, the video was really pretty limited in terms of how much play we could actually watch. He was doing a nice job on his man, keeping his man off the block, contesting shots, which was good, and not getting, you know, called for a ton of fouls, you know, contesting post shots, which you don't really like to see. He was doing a good job of clearing the boards, crashing the boards on both ends. But, you know, going against some of those guys in the USA Olympic team, I mean, it's going to be hard to protect the rim against, you know, O.J. Mayo and Kevin Durant, all those guys. I mean, it's a lot of talent. And on the average NBA team, maybe he'll be able to do a little bit better there. At least we would hope he would be able to. But I think foul trouble is going to be the issue. He did have 4 fouls in the game I saw. But he definitely looked like he was moving more smoothly. He was making decisions at a quicker pace. And I think that goes a long way to doing the kinds of things you're hoping he would be able to do on the defensive end, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of his issues at both ends of the floor last year, and this kind of connects back with the off-the-court discussion, but he was thinking too much, and he wasn't just out there reacting, which is what you have to do at this level, and that takes time. That's why guys get better with experience. I think the other thing that will help him is there's no way he can possibly be as much of a foul magnet in the eyes of the referees as he was as a rookie. I mean, as you establish yourself as an NBA player in your second year, that definitely tends to help guys.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if he's only going to go up from here, you would hope. I mean, although his minutes should ramp up, and you got to wonder, you know, sometimes he was playing so few minutes because he was getting fouled, you know, he was getting so many early foul calls, but sometimes he was playing a few minutes just because they were going with Joel. You wonder if he's playing 30 full minutes next year, if he's going to have trouble keeping the fouls off. What do you think?
I think he will at times. You know, the one thing we see in the numbers is everybody always talks about, well, you know, you can't use per 40-minute numbers because these guys foul too much or something like that, and which is a reasonable argument to some extent, but what we also see historically is that as guys get more minutes, they foul less because they take fewer chances. You know, they know to some extent that what they're doing out there and that they can get away with it if you're only playing 20 minutes a night and if you've got Joel there to pick up for you when you're not playing well. And then if you're needed to be out on the floor, you're going to play a little more conservatively in terms of taking some of those risks, and your fouls will go down as a result.
Hey, we're past the point where we can play this whole game where, like, we massage him in and out of the starting lineup, or we, like, let Joel take the brunt of that pressure and put Joel in sort of down the stretch. I mean, Greg needs to be a full-time starter this year. Would you agree?
I think if he's going to get to where people expect him to get in his development, I think he needs to be at the point where you have no choice but to start him as qualified as Joel is in that role.
But from day one, he should be starting. Right, we should be pushing for this. If he's not, if they come into training camp and we get some story about how the center position is still up for grabs, we as responsible media members should be pushing for Greg to get that starting spot on day one, right?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be up for grabs. Like I said, I'm surprised that Nate would ever declare any spot up for grabs. I think in his mind, at least publicly, shooting guard will be up for grabs going into training camp next year. But I think you'd definitely like to see Greg start to seize that role, like, within the first week or two of training camp.
Breaking news bulletin, Jeff Pendergraf's going to start over LaMarcus Aldridge day one.
town on Dykeman. I then light skin, stand with a slight grin. I don't know Mike Ben, cause I'm in this white Benz. All the way to ice in the Brightland, flash brighter than the lightning. But I knew from right then she was about the money, and I should fit right in, knowing how I might spend. To make the story short, other than a tight end, had a Washington Heights friend who bring that white in. Set up a meeting, a dude caught a flight in. Sat down at Soleil, popped a bottle of white then. Got straight to business like two corporate white men. The food came before I could take a bite in. He said, you the type I usually don't invite in, but since we got a like friend, I could get you like 10. I told him I could move like 10 by night's end. Put the white over the plate like I'm throwing strikes in.
Breaking news coming at the end of this podcast. Stay tuned if you're not bored already. All right, real quick, Kevin Durant, can we talk about him? I tried to bring him up earlier, but then you sidestepped that to talk more about Greg Oden, which is interesting because I thought it would have been the other way around.
It wasn't fair to Oden to talk about Durant there, but you know, you don't have to pull my ear to talk about Kevin Durant.
So the big headline is Coach K loves Durant, basically, or Durant separates himself from the pack at the camp. And I think once of the people who actually attended the camp, not the invitees, but the people who actually showed up, on paper, he seemed like the biggest name, sort of the farthest along in his development. So it wasn't a huge surprise to have him be at the top of that list. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, and I think also that beyond his overall talent, Durant sort of represents a lot of what the USA basketball program has been about. He's been involved with the USA program the last three summers, you know, which contrasts that to someone like, you know, Brandon Roy and Chris Sheridan reporting he's built up negative equity, quote unquote, by not participating the last two summers after he had before. You know, he's come in. We heard stories before his rookie season about the night they had an optional workout, and there were only three people that showed up. It was Jeff Green, actually, his teammate in Oklahoma City. Durant and Kobe Bryant were the only three guys who came in to get some optional work instead of seeing the nightlife in Vegas. So I think given all of that and then the skills he brings to the table, I don't think it's any surprise to me that he's up there. And I would not be surprised at all if he was part of that team even as soon as next year at the World Championships.
All right. Well, so aside from Durant, who would you give those last three spots to? I know Sheridan came out and said Brandon Roy, negative equity, he should have been there. I mean, it was a little ridiculous. I think Brandon made a good decision for himself, a good decision to rest, take the summer off. I understand that completely. Don't you think he's almost a shoo-in for sure for one of those 12 spots?
I don't think he's a shoo-in, but I think he's got a pretty good chance. I mean, you know, the participation in the last two camps aside, he fits everything they're looking for, you know, in terms of the character molds and things like that, and playing on a successful team in the NBA and being a bit of a leader even at a young age. You know, where he fits in the roster is a little bit of a different story. I've seen people slot him in as maybe taking Jason Kidd's spot if they don't go with a third true point guard on the roster and want to have either, you know, Roy handle the ball at stretches of time or something like that, you know, where you've got so many guys on that team who can handle and create for yourselves and for themselves that maybe you don't need a true point guard on there.
Do you think that pace thing with Brandon Roy, he kind of has this knock, like liking to play the ball in his hands slower. Do you think that's going to count against him when it comes to the selection process? I mean, obviously the team got up and down. They've got a bunch of guys who can handle the rock, like you said. You know, is that going to be a fit or is that going to be a question mark?
I think you have to show some ability to play without the ball, because when you're on the court with LeBron James, you know, it's a different story about whether you want the ball and have the ball in your hands. It's not quite whether you're going to give it to Steve Blake and Nicholas Batum when you're running the wings with Dwayne Wade and LeBron and guys like that. So he's going to have to show the ability to do it. But, I mean, the nice thing is he has improved his jumper to the point where, you know, I think that he's certainly a threat. Even from the international three, now that it's been moved back a little bit, it would have been nice for him as a guy who's probably a little better from 20 feet than from 23-9 to play at that old international line. But even at the current one, he should still be a threat.
All right, so we've got Durant, you say for sure. Brandon, you think maybe, probably is probably where we're at right now with him?
Yeah, I'll give him probably.
Okay, likely, potentially. How about potentially? Okay. How about those other two spots, or the other two and a half spots that we kind of gave to Brandon, but we didn't really give it to him? Who else do you think should be at the top of that list?
Well, you're gonna need some bigs. The group in camp. I mean, I think Odin has a chance for that. I mean, in theory, you know, as far as a guy who can protect the rim in international play and gives you that kind of size, might be a little tougher for him getting out. Because I mean, last time around, Team USA went for the more mobile big men like the Chris Bosh and Dwight Howard was the only true 7-footer guy who plays center all the time in the NBA that was on that roster. But if you look at him for certain matchups, like eventually when Yao gets back on the floor, things like that, I mean, he did okay with that as a rookie, but should do better down the line. I think there could potentially be a spot for him.
Wow, that's a big statement. Already, you think that Odin's going to be able to make it?
I mean, he's there.
Yeah, you got arguments. It all depends, I guess, positionally on what they want to do, you know? I mean, you got to wonder, though. Would he even accept it? I mean, is he ready for that commitment, given where his health has been and everything that goes involved? I mean, obviously they've talked about it being a really rigorous commitment. All the guys said that, you know, even Kobe and LeBron, guys who are in incredible physical shape all the time, have been for the last 10 years, said, you know, that the Olympics took a toll on them. I mean, do you think that's something that Greg would even be able to do, given where he's at physically?
I think it's a different physical commitment for those guys who are going to go in and start and play 30 minutes a night. Whereas a guy like Odin is probably not going to be called upon very often in the games. You know, he'll be playing out the string more often or used situationally. The big thing for him is going to be that opportunity to practice. And, I mean, as much as guys talked about that, we also saw a lot of those players have the best year of their career who were involved with that Olympic team, whether it be, you know, watching the work ethic of some of the best players in the league or just the fact that they were competing at such a high level in the summer. Something paid off in that and helped them out during last year during the NBA season.
So you think that Odin will be able to beat out JaVale McGee?
It wasn't exactly the most star-studded group of big guys in Vegas. You had Millsap. Who else was there?
I don't even know. It was terrible. Oh, the Lopez. I mean, I can see them going with Lopez almost. I mean, he's definitely a cut below, but maybe he's more mobile. That's what they were looking for, you know? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he's a lot more
inspiring.
Yeah,
that's
true.
I even picked Brook Lopez as my rookie of the year, but still, just can't quite buy the notion of him as an Olympian.
I feel like they should put both of them. If they're going to take one, it should have to be a two-for-one deal. I think both of them have to go. And you just use them.
I think you bring Robin along to chronicle the entire trip via video or something like that, some sort of blog.
He could do a video blog, sort of like Lloyd from Entourage on HBO.com. It's not a bad idea, actually. I think there you go. There's your 12 people. We did it. It's done. Sorry, Brandon Roy, you're not going to make it. We got both Lopez's and Kevin Durant. Tough luck. Better luck in 2016.
I'm sure he'll be thrilled to get the call that Robin Lopez made it over him. Is there any chance we can get Taylor Griffin on the squad?
Oh, that'd be awesome. Taylor, well, he's busy getting his hair extensions. Taylor Griffin, that man is really bald. I mean, talk about prematurely balding. It's like Canzano bald. Really, really bad. But anyway, let's get back to the big news of the day. Hey, did this Etaan Thomas trade go through for the Thunder, quote-unquote Thunder?
Yeah, it's on their website. I checked it out.
Okay, so it's Etaan Thomas for...
Etaan Thomas and a couple of second-round draft picks, I believe, for Damian Wilkins and Chucky Atkins. And it's interesting that Damian Wilkins will finally make his way to Minnesota because they signed him to an offer sheet back in 2005 after his rookie season that the then Sonics matched and have kind of been regretting the last couple of years. I think the new Presti regime would not be real thrilled to have that contract on their books. And you know, Damian badly wanted to get out of Oklahoma City. That was pretty obvious to people who watched him. You know, he wasn't having a good time there. He wasn't playing on a bad team in Oklahoma City. And I think he's got to be pleased with this trade, even if it's to Minneapolis, which is not exactly Miami. But he's got a chance to play since they don't have very many wing players.
Well, this is the move that cements David Kahn as sort of the best GM in the league, right?
Well, certainly the most active since now he's got Quentin Richardson on his roster who's been traded three times this summer. He traded Etaan Thomas, who is on his third team of the summer. So he's certainly keeping things interesting for everybody.
Are they the worst team ever in the history of the NBA by the time this all shakes out? Assuming Rubio doesn't come over, don't they have the ability, potentially, to be one of the worst teams in the history of the NBA?
No, I can't see that. I mean, they still got Al Jefferson. That's a nice piece. You know, I mean, they were really coming together and looking pretty good before Jefferson tore his ACL. Part of that was that Randy Foy went through a really good couple-month stretch before he went back, regressed back to Randy Foydom, and they finally decided to give up on that experiment. And, you know, Mike Miller was part of it to some extent, and even though he never deigned to shoot last season, which really irritated the Timberwolves to no end. So, I mean, there's talent there. I mean, Jefferson and Love is a pretty nice duo.
Think of Johnny Flynn.
He, you know, I didn't see him, but the reports on what he did in the summer league were pretty impressive, and it makes sense that he could be one of those guys who is a better NBA player than he is a college player because of his speed and the way the rules are. You know, I kind of thought that Patty Mills, to a lesser extent, was a guy who was going to be like that as far as taking advantage of the rule changes, and it sounds like Flynn did that in the summer league and also showed the ability to set up teammates really well. So, I mean, you watched him. What do you think?
Johnny Flynn looks sick. I mean, like you were saying, with the rules, no one could keep him out of the lane. He was drawing a lot of fouls. He was getting contact and finishing at the hoop, which you always like to see from young guys, especially small guys. You know, he was calling for a lot of pick and rolls. He was keeping his dribble, doing things that sometimes Bayless didn't do. You know, he didn't find himself trapped too often, which is always nice. Awesome. So I guess I take back my statement about them being one of the worst teams of all time. I guess with him, Kevin Love, and Al Jefferson peg leg, they should be okay, you know, at least with that core. But outside of that, I mean, that is an awful roster. Have they gotten better? All these moves, they've done like 10 moves. Are they better now than they were at the end of last season or not?
Well, I think they've committed to rebuilding more than they had then. I mean, you have a guy like Mike Miller on the roster. You know, he's not a fit for a rebuilding team. So they cashed him into Rubio, who either they get him over in grade, or if not, he goes over and develops a couple of years, and maybe Johnny Flynn establishes himself as a starter, and you got Rubio as trade bait. So as much of a punchline as he can be in general, I like what David Kahn has done. And, you know, a lot of it has just kind of been exchanging my garbage for your garbage, and, you know, we'll give guys some fresh starts and see what they can do.
So is Quentin Richardson going to break out and have, like, a 35-point-a-game year this year? Is that what we should be expecting?
Until his back gives out after about six games.
Why don't they bring Marbury into play, too?
And would he live 24-hour-a-day Ustream even when he was during the NBA season?
During the game? Yeah, he could just, like, pull the ball up at half court and turn over, look at the camera, you know, wave. I don't know. He could do all sorts of stuff. That Ustream thing. Were you watching that at all or no?
No, I was busy working on stuff, but I mean, I got the updates via Twitter, and Awoj had his take on it, which was very entertaining.
It was probably, I mean, talk about guys that need sports psychologists. I mean, I guess we'll know that Greg's really lost it when he goes and does something like that, because that Ustream was the most terrifying. I mean, it was like watching someone have a mental breakdown for 24 hours, you know?
Yeah, that's beyond sports psychologist. That's straight-up psychologist at some point.
Like a psychiatric ward. Like you kind of felt like he had taken a lot of, like, mood stabilizers or whatever pills, like, make you feel really happy in the short term. Like, I felt like he was just, like, constantly chugging those for 24 hours straight because he was, like, really happy and, like, talking about his relationship with God and his faith, and it was, you know, like that, you know, saying sort of all these things that you would think, you know, if you read them, they're good things to say, but the way he was delivering them, how erratic he was, I mean, it was kind of scary. Like, you felt like you should probably call the cops. Like, who knew, you know, who knows what he was going to do? It was not a comfortable feeling. I could only watch it for about 15 minutes at a time, and it was just like, I don't want this blood on my hands if anything goes wrong here. I'm backing away. I'm closing the window. Sex, cars, clothes, money, and murder. From soldier to server, hood hopping, hoping to merge or rocking. My own pops got me open on burners, no option. Had a heart problem coping with murmurs, the doctrine, no cock rent. Winning since niggas was whopping, way when Vakim was knocking. Streets was what it was when thugs was thugs and gun wars galore, going slug for slugging. Choose drugs and all niggas.
cause love is love. With the crew wall to wall, I be bugged to bust. So beef wall, it's way too deep to sleep. Niggas keep up, cause certified killers creep.
Oh, now for the big breaking news. So explain what we're doing next weekend. Not this coming weekend, the weekend of August 8th and August 9th.
Well, you know, I've been coming down to Portland for all of last season, made, I think, 15 trips in total, got intimately familiar with Southwest Washington on that stretch along I-5, and now we're going to see if the Blazers Edge fans can return the favor and come up and check out Seattle for a weekend, including my podcast co-host here, our host. So on Saturday night, the Storm is taking on the who are we taking on? I should probably know this, actually, shouldn't I? The New York Liberty.
Wait, does Rebecca Lobo still play for them?
No, she's actually retired, unfortunately.
Okay, does Stephon Marbury play for them?
Not yet, but check back next week, you never know. He could announce it on his Ustream.
Okay, so August 8th, 7 p.m., New York Liberty versus the Seattle Storm at Key Arena, and we've got a whole section for Blazers Edge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got it all set up. $15 tickets in the lower bowl, so good luck trying to get a deal like that to a Blazers game. And we'll put everybody together and have a good time, and then after the game, head out to some of the local drinky establishments on Queen Anne Hill. That's one of the nice things about Key Arena as compared to the Rose Garden, is superior as the Rose Garden is in virtually every other way, is the fact that it's right down in the middle of a neighborhood, so you got all sorts of places right there within a couple blocks. So we'll go there and hang out and talk Blazers and talk some Storm and whatever anyone else wants to talk about.
That sounds pretty good. So the idea is they don't necessarily just have to come up for the game and then leave after the game, right? It's like a whole weekend or at least a whole day where we can come up at whatever point, enjoy Seattle, the big city, the lights. What's that thing called? Sticks up really tall in the air, you know?
It's the Space Needle. We're quite proud of it.
I'm blanking on it. What's it called again? I forgot. I've never heard of it before. Oh, yeah, that's right, the Space Needle. So you go up and do things like that. You can go see Paul Allen's museum, and then you go watch the game, and then you hang out with us, which is going to be the real highlight because we're going to be able to talk Blazers and whatnot. And then the next day, on Sunday, for those who are truly adventurous, they could stay and watch the Mariners play. The Mariners are playing Tampa Bay, so that's a battle.
I mean, American League champions. Tampa Bay, right?
Isn't that a battle of first-place teams, Mariners versus Tampa Bay?
No, not quite. We'll see what Mariners are left by that point at the end of this week's pre-trade deadline sell-off.
Hopefully, you know, some of the guys who do get sold off, Minnesota playing two guard. they're desperate. I'm sorry, I can't get over this whole Minnesota thing. That roster is terrible. But, okay, so Sunday, August 9th, Mariners game, 1 p.m. So those who don't want to have to drive home after the long, crazy Kevin Pelton parting shenanigans, which will probably involve like karaoke or like maybe live poetry reading of some of your sabermetrics, or who knows what it'll be. I'm sure it'll be.
If we go to certain places, karaoke is definitely a possibility. I don't know about the reading.
Wait, are you going to sing Michael Jackson? I heard you were going to change your number to 37 because the number of the Thriller was on the top of the charts. Are you going to break out like all of, I mean, I don't even know. What could you sing? What would be the best Michael Jackson song for Kevin Pelton to sing? That should be a poll on Blazers Edge. It's like, what do we want to videotape Kevin Pelton singing at karaoke night after a giant Storm victory? Because that's what people don't understand about you, KP2. They think you're this basketball, you're this NBA basketball expert, right? But really deep down, you're just a crazy WNBA fanatic, the kind of guy who runs around, no shirt on, waving his shirt like Brandi Chastain over his head after the Seattle Storm win another victory. I mean, you're going to be spraying people with champagne once you guys win the, what's it called, Stanley Cup?
What is the name of the WNBA trophy? I don't know if it has a name.
You're ruining the whole storyline here. Oh, yeah, it has a name.
I've held the WNBA championship trophy. You know, I got a championship ring. Did I tell you that?
I didn't know that. You have a WNBA championship ring?
I do, from the 2004 Seattle Storm. I have more championship rings than John Stockton and Karl Malone and Charles Barkley combined.
Well, not Randy Brown, who's pawning his on eBay as we speak.
Which hadn't fallen on tough enough times that I had to punt it off yet, no.
That's hilarious. I can't wait to buy it in like 2 years. Once Basketball Prospectus tanks, I'm gonna buy your I'm just gonna sit around waiting for the eBay list. K. Pelton 1983, and here it comes. Boom, the championship ring. Oh, that's gonna be awesome.
Anyway, it's pretty high because there was one of them did get sold on eBay by a guy who got fired and was bitter with the organization, and it fetched a fair value. I mean, Storm fans are serious collectors, so.
That's incredible. Well, can we just call it the Reggie Miller Championship Trophy, right? That's what we're going to call the WNBA. Okay, all jokes aside, Stanley Cup, all these like ha-ha Reggie Miller jokes. All jokes aside, what am I don't have never been to a WNBA game, obviously, before in my life. Probably 98% of our listeners, well, maybe that's not true. 99% of our listeners probably have never been to a WNBA game. What are we in store for? And be reasonable. Don't be like this WNBA honk. It's like, oh, it's this amazing basketball game. You know, be reasonable. What are we in store for? Be honest.
I think the action on the court is very strong fundamentally. You know, that's what draws a lot of kind of basketball purists to the game, and the Storm executes very well with Sue Bird, and, you know, the league's best point guard, Warren Jackson, two-time MVP. Kind of, it's like if Dirk Nowitzki were a tremendous defender. That's the only way basically to explain Warren Jackson, because she's got the size of a center, she shoots the three as well as anyone in the league, and she's the Defensive Player of the Year. That I think is the big thing that you'll be surprised by is kind of the similarity in the atmosphere and the passion between a Blazers game and a Storm game, in terms of, you know, I think you guys in Portland know how special you have it at the Rose Garden and Blazer Mania and people getting married wearing Blazers jerseys, as I saw in the recent Blazer Maniac show on Comcast Sportsnet. I haven't heard of anyone doing that yet with the Storm. But it's the same kind of passion, and the fact that you get everybody packed into this intimate arena in the first place, and everybody's in the lower bowl, it gets louder really at Storm games than it ever did at Sonics games at Key Arena in its own way. So I think that people are going to be pleasantly surprised by that. Then the last game, I wish that, you know, it could have been something like this. Would have been Blazers Edge night. We had a triple overtime affair between the Storm and the LA arch rival LA Sparks. That was one of five games in WNBA history to go to three overtimes or more before Sue Bird knocked down three three-pointers in the third overtime to finally decide it.
Sue Bird's better than Sergio Rodriguez, isn't she?
I'd like her chances in game one-on-one.
You like her chances? I think she could take him. Honestly, I'm being dead serious. You think I'm joking? I'm not. I think that she could take him.
You know, Sergio's got the 4-inch height advantage. We'd see how much of a factor that would be. But you know, Sue's probably a better shooter or comparable as a shooter. You know, Sergio, the strength of his game is passing. He's not going to have anyone to pass it to in one-on-one. So
basically what we're going to come to here and the conclusion of our podcast is, if people want to see the next third-string point guard for the Portland Trail Blazers, they should come see Seattle Storm point guard Sue Bird and the rest of her teammates dominate the New York Liberty. Used to rhyme, so in that I became more curious. Fuck being up north, delirious, more serious. So killer did mixtapes. CEOs heard, now here come Big Cake. But one cat said, Cam, you better recoup. For you back on your block, baby, dead on your stoop. But unhook me up with all this cheddar and loot. The best rap deal of all time, next to Snoop. Money more to clutch, money more to touch. I don't just rhyme, my own liquor stores and such. But yeah, yo, the rap game remind me of the crack game. Niggas wanna get their gun, then start the clap game. For that fame, grow entertainment. Sports, drugs, entertainment. To the arraignment killer. Come streets of